PeteRV.com.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. It's Friday. Thanks for joining us here on the program. We're broadcasting live at the State House in Montpelier in our what seems to be kind of spot getting kind of comfortable in this week. Yesterday, big happenings here with the election of Governor Shumlin by the Vermont legislature, also his inaugural speech. We're going to focus on those and a bunch of other issues this morning and implore you and encourage you and try to inspire you to perhaps even give us a call on the program this morning. This is a golden opportunity. We're down here on Fridays, and one of the reasons we're here is to provide you some access to the folks that make some of the important decisions here in Vermont. So don't hesitate to give us a call. You know, what frustrates somebody like me is to hear, oh, well, Mark, you know, I never call when you're down at the State House because it feels like it would be bothering you. Hardly the case. In fact, just the opposite. Would very much encourage you to give us a jingle at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Got a good lineup for you this morning on the program. Coming up in our second hour this morning, we're going to talk with Senator Kevin Mullen. We'll also talk with Governor Shumlin, joins us coming up at about 10:10. And later this hour, we're going to chat with a woman involved in a local organization working on property tax reform. Heidi Speer will join us. We'll talk about property tax reform. We're going to talk about that and much more. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the President of the Vermont Senate, Senator John Campbell from Windsor County. John, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
Good, Mark. Thank you. Great to be here. There we go.
Yeah, sorry, my fault there.
You forgot you did with the mark time.
Yeah, you know.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Great to be here with you and your audience, as always.
Yeah, you're back now serving another term as Senate President pro tem.
Yes, I am. I'm not sure what happened to my mental health over the summer, but yes, I decided to come back.
So. Okay, all right. Yeah. Was there any question on that, John?
No, actually, there wasn't. I feel that I have been fortunate to be elected by the Senate for the last, two terms, and this will be my third. And I think everybody has different roles. There are senators or folks that are great chairs, and that's where their strengths lie. I think one of my strengths is in leadership and being able to get people together from both sides of the aisle to have them discuss their problems, their issues, and to come to agreement.
So you call yourself a consensus builder?
I would think so. I think that would be apropos.
The election yesterday, let's talk about, you mentioned committee chairs. It seems as though there may be some heavy deliberations going on your side of in your chamber about who's going to be committee chairs. A couple in particular, Senate Natural Resources, Senate Education. Where are things on those two in particular?
Well, those are, in fact, actually, after I leave here, I'm heading down to meet with the Lieutenant Governor and Senator Mazza, a third member of committee and committees, to discuss that. You know, it is tough this year, and I think one of the reasons is because we want to make sure to get it right with natural resources is going to be one of the most important committees. It's going to be dealing with one of my major priorities, and in fact, actually, the governor highlighted it as his yesterday, and that's Lake Champlain, and not just Lake Champlain, but the waterways throughout the state. And then if you look at the over to education, you know, there's the chair who's currently there, Senator McCormick. He stated he would like to be considered for natural resources, but our chair of education is going to be also equally important because, which I'm sure we'll get into, but one of the things that I have set as my priority is to do something about our current cost of education and not just nibbling around the edges. We've done that for several years, trying to, you know, to placate a lot of different groups because there are so many different groups that are involved here. And I just don't think that the taxpayers of Vermont are in a position to be able to handle the continuing rise, an exponential rise in cost of education.
So are you leery to move Senator McCormick off of education because that would create a big hole over there?
Well, there are certain people who have, different strengths and different beliefs, and Senator McCormick has certainly been a great chair. He's done a good job. I personally feel that he probably would do a better job over at Natural Resources, and that the person who goes into education has got to have a different mindset, I believe.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
I think that there are certain people who believe that the status quo may be okay, or just do a little change here and there. My research over the summer, over the last 2 years, and going into in depth into some of the problems that are causing the current financial crunch in education, shows that we need to have somebody who is willing to and capable of shaking it up. I hate to use a euphemism like that, but we need that.
I was interested a couple of weeks ago. I was talking with the speaker, and he suggested that he didn't think that education spending right now was necessarily too much, which kind of surprised me because I thought there was pretty universal agreement on that. Where are you on that question? Do you think Vermont's spending too much on education?
Well, let's just say this is I don't know the total context of what the speaker said that, but I certainly believe that there are certainly areas in the state that are spending too much in education. But with that said, I think a lot of it has to do with some of the mandates that have been placed upon educational facilities and teachers and principals of schools, not only by the feds, but also by us. I think that they keep on getting these mandates, supposedly they come down from either Montpelier or from D.C., saying you have to do this, you have to do that. I've spoken to some teachers who, folks that I know have been always well respected as teachers who have been on the job for over 20 years, and they say that their job of being a teacher has changed so dramatically. Mm-hmm. It's not being just a teacher anymore. It's not going in and teaching kids subjects. It's documenting your time for 15 minutes and what you did with this child and what you did with that. What did your paraprofessional do over the last, five hours? So I think that there are many topics that we have to really look at closely. And, we are responsible. The state is responsible for some of the mandates that have been placed. Now, some of those mandates, they're worthwhile and they're needed. But I can't say that all of them are. And to me, and as my daughter's a teacher, and I feel that when you start taking teachers away from what their job responsibility is, what they learn to do, what they love to do, then it's the children who get hurt.
Okay, so I'm sorry, but do you think there's too much? So you think there's too much spending in some areas?
In some areas, I know that there are areas like in Hartford, where I'm from, the Hartford High School, they've reduced their spending, and unfortunately, as you know how it works, the taxes don't always go down as a result of that, and that is because there are other schools in certain other parts of the area, and I'm not going to to point them out right now because. There are certain reasons why their costs may be high,
right.
And I don't want it to look like they're just being wasteful spenders. So the point is that there are, the way our system is set up, there can be certain areas that spend higher, there can be other areas that spend lower, and their taxes still rise as a result of the way we currently finance our education system.
You say you don't want to nibble around the edges, you want to do something significant, but how... As they might say, how heavy a lift is that going to be?
I think it's going to be a real heavy lift, and I'm not sure it's something that can be done in one session. And I can tell you this, that I am not wedded to having to force something through just to say we did something in this one session. I think that if it takes two, it takes two. But we know that right now, and this is going to sound very controversial, but the fact is that everybody lives by the Brigham decision currently, and that's been in place for quite some time. I think things have changed. I think that the environment, the number of students that we have currently, the not just the ratios, but in what areas. I think that they have changed in a dramatic fashion, that almost changes the game plan that per se that was presented during or the argument that was presented during the Brigham decision. So what I feel is that we should look, as legislators, look to see how we feel is the best way and the fairest way to provide an educational opportunity for our children throughout the state. And if somebody says, well, you can't do that because that might trigger the Brigham case. Well, if that's the case, there'll be a challenge in court. And as many significant precedent-setting cases along the way throughout history, not just education, there comes a time, it's almost like a shelf life, where things change. When those facts change, that means that the subject matter in which they're discussing, in this case education, will be looked at in a different way from an appellate standpoint.
Okay, you got to help me understand this, because my recollection is the fundamental thing in Brigham is this equal opportunity for an education. So, I mean, that sounds fundamental that would never really change.
Well, I think if you look at Brigham decision, it's not just equality. I mean, they're talking about other areas or different prongs to it. It's not just it's access. It's equality based on factors of such as the student population and what kind of the property values in towns, things of that nature. I think there's no question equality in education is going to always be a fundamental issue that is going to be addressed and has to be maintained. But I think that there are things that can be done that may end up as far as, let's say, with the formula of how you set that up, and I'm not saying the formula necessarily is the problem, but how it is applied. I think that's where I'm discussing as far as applied, that there might be some issues that, from a technical standpoint, would be violative of the Brigham decision.
Do you think there's a way to do this that's simpler?
You know, I wish there was. And you know something? How many years have you been doing this? A lot longer than I have. And I'll bet you almost every 90% of those times that you've been here that education funding, one way or the other, has been discussed. So I would like to think that, especially knowing the very intelligent
Nobody, you know, asked me what I think.
Mark, let me just turn it around. How do you think we should address the education system?
Quickly and fundamentally.
And what do you mean by that, Mark? I mean, specifically, do you have something in mind?
No, I don't, because that's I'm not quite at that pay grade yet.
Well, that's it. We're at the John Campbell Show. My guest today is it's Mark. I love it. Mark Johnson. I'm going to fill in for you. But anyway,
I'll give you the live ad. You can do a live ad for Red Hen, I'll bet, too.
Where's your spot?
No, I do it off the top of my head.
Do you?
I do it off
Red
of the
Hen?
Experience that I had there.
Well, you know, that's the thing. In fact, every time I listen to you, and especially when you speak about Red Hen, I know that that's one place that I have to go to sometime, because from the way you speak about it, it's got to be great. So I would urge all of your listeners out there to make sure that they go out there and try it out themselves. Let's see what their decision is.
The sticky buns. And let's talk
about sticky buns. That's right. You know what?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the sticky buns. In fact, Red Hen, if you're listening right now, Mark said he would love to have some sticky buns delivered to the State House. I can't ask that because it would be
bribery.
Yes.
Yeah. And your price is, that's not right.
But don't forget, Red Hen, folks. Okay.
We're talking with the Senate President, John Campbell, is joining us. We're going to head up to Fairfax. Bob, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Loud and clear. Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead.
In Fairfax this past year, we had a 9% increase in our education property tax, but our school budget only went up by 3%. So that left two-thirds of that money to go to the state. And I am afraid that it's not only being used for education parity, but it's a surreptitious fund to finance downtown high-density redevelopment. It's rather complicated to explain, but that is where some of that education funding is going, and I don't believe that's an appropriate use for education funding, Mr. Campbell.
All right, Bob. Let me get his opinion. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate your call.
Bob, listen, first of all, I understand and I agree with the fact of your, and I guess it's more understand the fact that your concern with the drop in your cost, yet the rise in your property tax. However, I have to disagree with you on the other aspect of this, that it's being diverted to other places. The Ed Fund in the past has unfortunately been used to fill some gaps back quite some time, but thankfully people like yourself and others throughout the state have stated that we are no longer going to accept something like that from happening. And I know that, at least from on the Senate side, and I believe actually through the legislative process, that it is not being diverted, that the money is going exactly where it's intended to go.
244-1777 is our local number, toll free 877-291-8255. Why have you put a focus on Lake Champlain? Why do you think the governor's put a focus on Lake Champlain? And let me put a fine point on it. Is it because of this lawsuit?
No, actually, from my standpoint, it's not. And I have to actually plead a little ignorance on that with as far as the lawsuit's concerned, because that really has not been something that's been on the my front page, because I, of course, live over in the Connecticut River. What really got me with Lake Champlain is a visit to Senator Ayers. She lives in Addison County, and I went over there, and her husband Alan is a physician over there, and we went out in the boat and looked around. I couldn't believe the condition of the lake, and with the algae blooms and milfoil, and the other thing is too, I think I got a healthy education last year from Justin Johnson, who's now chief for the governor, but he sat down. We spoke for several hours concerning the phosphate issue and how that affects not only the lake but also the inland inland streams and rivers. So, where my expertise mostly in the past has always been, let's say, with victims of crime or criminal justice or some of the other judiciary areas, I've really, in my second term as pro tem, try to focus it on learning in a different area that is really important to the state. And I also do know that, Lake Champlain is an economic driver. And there's discussions like, well, who's going to pay for the lake cleanup? Should it just be the counties that are on the lake? And I don't think that's necessarily true. And this is somebody coming from the other side of the state. But because, Lake Champlain serves us all. Whether you use it, whether you live by it, live on it, it doesn't matter. It's people come to the state to look at and to enjoy that lake. And we as responsible citizens should be there to try to help resuscitate it.
Let's go to Waterbury Center. George, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, George.
Morning, Senator. I just wanted to address Bob's comment about downtown development and diversion of funds, and that it was somewhat complicated. I believe what he's referencing is the growth of TIFs that promote downtown development by giving them tax breaks and therefore transferring that tax burden to rural areas. And I'd just like Senator Weston.
Campbell.
Oh, did a series of presentations on property tax and its continued burden on the taxpayer. And that was one of the items that he mentioned during his presentation some years back. I'd just like your comments on that.
Yeah, and I think that is technically the correct. I mean, the TIF districts, when they are created, they do shift a tax burden, but it's not one where it's raiding, as I think Bob might have been alluding to, the raiding the Ed Fund per se. Not even per se. It's not really raiding the Ed Fund, but it is clearly TIF districts do affect our tax base. But the theory behind them is, by creating them, you are incentivizing businesses, business growth. And, we have to look at one of the most important things that we're facing now is we don't have a downturn. The economy is starting to snap back, and Vermont is lagging behind. And one of the problems that we're being advised that's as a cause is the the business businesses just are not starting up as fast as we would like them. Because you start a business, you're employing folks, you're getting them off of unemployment. It's the a theory that I think certainly is viable and one that we should be continuing to support.
Talking with Senator John Campbell, let's just quickly go back here on the committee assignments. Do you, or the chairmanships, do you anticipate there are going to be any changes in chairman beside natural resources and education?
No, I don't. I'm just going through it over my head. I think that everything else is going to stay the same. No one's, if anyone would change from a chair, it would be because we would need them as a, in another position. As I said, you know, we have 29 great people. Other, you know, I consider myself outside the chairmanship range here.
Okay.
We have 29 folks that are great. They are great servants, public servants. But the fact, as I mentioned, I think there are people who have certain qualities that a chairman would need, a chairperson would need. And not everybody possesses that. And it's not knocking them. It's just saying that their strengths lie in different places.
The governor's decision to not pursue the single-payer health care, I have not asked you what your reaction was to that.
Well, it's interesting because I think last year when we talked about this, this was one of my last conversations with you.
Yeah, when you had your plan B. That you claim you didn't actually have, but sort of seemed to kind of half exist.
Well, you know, let's put it this way. It's not the plan B.
What was that all about anyway?
Well, the fact of the matter is that and there's no secret that I didn't think that the single payer itself, I didn't think it financially it was going to work. And I kind of predicted exactly what the outcome is. But let me just say first, the governor, you know, people are knocking him right and left on this thing. I actually look at and laud him for the courage that he had to come out and actually say before the session started that it wasn't going to work. He very easily could have come right now and presented that in his budget yesterday and said, here's the plan, not made a major comment on whether it's viable financially or not, and put it in our laps. Very easily could have done that, and he didn't do it. And you know something, I've known Peter Shumlin for since 2000, and I've had hours and hours and hours, hundreds of hours of conversations with Peter. I know what his passions are and what they're not, and what he really believes in and what he doesn't, I think. And I can tell you, the single payer, as many times as we sat down and I said, Peter, I don't think it's going to work, he would be there. I could see it in his eyes. He believed that he could pull us off. And you know something? We were in an area where it's totally, the growth in healthcare costs is unsustainable. He had the courage to try it, knowing that it's going to be a political albatross that I think it just became. And but you know something? He had the courage to come out, and I think that that shows a lot and speaks a lot and it speaks volumes to his personality and that one side of him that a lot of people don't know.
What did you think of the protest yesterday?
You know, I was fine with it until they showed the utter disrespect for the Reverend Bob there, you know, who was, I think he's one of the greatest guys. Here's a man who walked side by side with Martin Luther King. And, you know, if there's anybody who knows about human rights and was willing to put liberty, but his life at stake, it was this guy along with Martin Luther King. And yet, when he is giving an invocation, you have, knuckleheads that, you know, up there yelling and screaming, being extremely disrespectful. And that's not what I call protesting. That's what I call being obnoxious and doing something that flies in the face of our First Amendment rights to demonstrate to make our positions known. And I can tell you also, I think they did more harm for the people that really believed in single payer, and they have. Again, done, I think, almost irreversible harm in ways. And there were a lot of people who believed and were passionate about single payer that weren't there yesterday.
So how does it do irreversible harm?
I think it shows.
Unless, you know, the people in here are going to get their nose bent out of joint because there was a protest.
Well, because if you listen to what they were saying, it finally came out. And this is what one of the problems that I had last year discussing single payer was when I had people come and say they thought that what single payer meant was that they were going to get free health care. And when I would say that to some of the supporters, they go, no, 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 no one's ever told them that. Yesterday, that's exactly what the protesters are saying. We deserve, we want free health care. We want to be able to, you know, the government to pay for it all. Now, most of the people there, they're probably getting free health care anyway right now. And if they do go to the hospital, they're using the hospital as their emergency room. You know, here it is. We were trying to find a way to help all Vermonters to make sure that they have full access to health insurance, or I mean, health care, quality health care. We're not going to stop that. That's going to continue on. But the fact of when you had people that would come into this building over the last 3 or 4 years who had what we would consider legitimacy of their, we would sit down and listen to their issues. And then you find them coming yesterday and, you know, utterly disrespecting not only the process, but every person who's ever worked in this building. And not only every person who's ever worked in this building, but also every one of the voters of this state, every one of the taxpayers of this state. You know, that this was for the people. This is the people's house. This was a people's event. And it wasn't for theirs to hijack.
Last question, this $100 million budget deficit, your goal in closing that is what, John?
Well, obviously to close it is the goal, but how we do it is a different story. I think we have to, this is the first time, and you and I think we've talked about this last year, where we generally will have budget shortfalls, and yeah, there's usually a little cubby hole we can find this or that in. And it's not like that this year. I think you're going to see drastic reductions in our expenditures. I think you're going to see a closer look at programs that are currently in place, whether it be from the human services area or whether it be in across other areas of government. There's going to be some real pain felt. And, you know, I've said this for a while. Vermont has been a great place. We don't like to harm people, or I shouldn't say we don't like harm, we like to help people. We like to help any way we can. Sometimes you can only take so much on, though. We don't have an endless supply of money, and because the federal government has for the most part abandoned us fiscally, and that's only going to continue to get worse, I think, with the spirit, especially with the current Congress, and I think what we need to do is find out that what it is that we have to do. Or how do we define state government that we are able to provide for the health and safety of our citizens?
Thank you for your time. Appreciate
Mark, thank you as always, and don't forget the Red Hen, and they do have great sticky buns.
That's
take it from Mark.
Ringing endorsements from Senate President John Campbell. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, continue to talk about property taxes. We'll be back here at the State House right after this.
The holidays aren't over at Lamoille Valley Ford. Folks, Dan Keene here. Last year was awesome, and we're coming right out of the gates with an unprecedented offer to kick off the new year. I'm excited to...